Good evening and welcome to Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. One of the things that makes our region special is the presence of the Missouri River. Our history, our culture, and so much of our economy is tied into the river. And when we talk about history, there's a new book out that I want to let you know about on this evening's program. It's called Growing Up with the River, Nine Generations on the Missouri. It's a marvelous book aimed primarily at children, but I think it's something that you'll enjoy hearing about as well. We'll have the authors, Dan and Connie Burkhardt, on the show this evening talking about growing up with the river. It's Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. Well, good evening and welcome to Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. I'm Darren Helwedge. Dan and Connie Burkhardt are our guests on this evening's program. They're going to be talking about their new book, Growing Up with the River, Nine Generations on the Missouri. And I want to let you know, as you hear this conversation, that you'll have a chance to meet them and maybe get a copy of the book signed by them, as Dan and Connie Burkhardt and the artist who's done the wonderful illustrations for this book, Brian Haynes, will all be in Columbia next week, Tuesday afternoon from 4:30 to 6:30, I should say. They'll be at Stotler Lounge at the Memorial Union. So you'll get a chance to hear that. It's the annual Jacqueline K. Jones Lecture from the Missouri Botanic Garden. Now let's enjoy this evening's interview, Thinking Out Loud. All right, it's Thinking Out Loud from KBIA. There is a new book that's just come out. It's called Growing Up with the River, Nine Generations on the Missouri. And the authors are Dan and Connie Burkhardt, and we are joined with them both. Welcome to you. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Fun to be here.
Yes.
I want to talk about the book. First of all, may I say it's great fun for anybody that's interested in the history of our state, and particularly, I think, folks that have grown up along the river. Tell me about your connection to the river, where each of you is from, because I there's a feel to this that tells me you guys are probably from this region, right?
That is correct. Connie and I live in St. Louis, but we've been fortunate enough to have a farm out along the Missouri River for a long time, and we spend as much time out there as we can, and we like to take friends and visitors out there to show them the Missouri countryside, and that was really the genesis for this book.
It's subtitled Nine Generations on the Missouri, and it really does kind of go from one era to the next through the stories of mostly kids in these different river towns and along the river. And it starts off with a boy in a small village along the Missouri River before Missouri is even a state, before this was even part of the United States, a little village of La Charette. And tell me just a little bit in your own words that story, because it was a fun place to start this all off.
Well, we thought the story had to start, of course, with one of the greatest adventures of all time, Lewis and Clark. And Lewis and Clark stopped in La Charette, which is near present-day Marthasville, right on the Missouri River. On their way west in 1804, they stopped there again in 1806 on their way back. And that's when our story begins. They received some rations there on their way upriver, and they had a big celebration when they returned. And our boy, who observes the goings-on in that chapter, meets Seaman, their loyal Newfoundland dog, and watches the celebration unfold. And he plants a bur oak acorn in commemoration of their arrival, and that bur oak makes appearances throughout the rest of the book.
It's again called Growing Up with the River. Dan and Connie Burkhardt with us, and from that start, we talk about settlers of the region. American Indians move out, French, and then later German settlers move in. I thought it was fun to have some German immigrants there. My German family came through Nebraska, not Missouri, but there were some parts of that sounded kind of familiar to me from the tales of my own story. And through the eyes of the kids, we talk about, you know, now this is part of the United States. Now Missouri has become a state. And you move on to talk about the town of Hermann, and of course later on in the chronology here, the Civil War, And I thought that was a very interesting part of this also. Tell me a little bit more about Herman and what it was like during the Civil War in that region through the eyes of this book.
Well, Herman is in Gasconade County. And in Missouri, slavery was really a county-by-county issue since Missouri was kind of divided in its sentiments. And Gasconade County was strongly abolitionist. That's what the German settlers came here for, in large part, was to escape what was happening in Germany. So they were staunchly against slavery. And our children in this chapter witness some of the things that happened in terms of the goings-on along the river and the political activities of that time. And the German spirit was infused with an opposition to slavery, and that wasn't the case in some of the neighboring communities and counties where there were slaves and slavery was prevalent. And we talk about that in the chapter about Herman in the 1860s and also in the chapter about New Haven just down the river in the 1880s, where the story was much different.
And while this is, you know, written as a children's book or through the eyes of children, this would be one of the examples, I think, that even lifelong Missourians like myself, you know, it was really something to learn about, refresh my understanding of this county-by-county approach to abolition and slavery, and to just step back, as I did many times when I was working on the book with Dan, and say, oh, my gosh, I didn't even realize that, you know, that this is just something that adults reading the book with their children and grandparents reading the book, there's just a lot to take away from the stories.
I was going to ask about that, the kind of, to use the vernacular of my business, the target demo for the book, because it is something that I found very enjoyable, and I also learned quite a bit in reading the book. It seems like it's aimed at children. It's certainly something that that kids would enjoy. I wouldn't say this is something that you would give to a brand new reader, but maybe third, fourth grade, somebody's going to be able to handle it themselves. But for younger kids, something you could read to them. And that kind of seemed to me like that was what you were shooting for here.
Yes, you've nailed it. So Dan had done some previous books related to conservation, a coffee table book called Missouri River Country, and then a book in the Everglades about another major watershed. And then he came up with this idea and said he wanted to do a children's book, but it was really to help educate and groom the next generation of conservationists in Missouri. And he started working with local historical societies and hammering out these chapters. And it was written with the idea that perhaps a 10 or 11-year-old, you know, who's an avid reader, would be able to read these stories and not be intimidated by them, but that it would be a layered book. Dan was always talking about the fact that this is really one that, as it's laying around and, you know, adults pick up and study the illustrations for other reasons and look at the sidebars. And then, you know, as you've seen in the book, it's an invitation to get out into the Missouri countryside. So it's really a family book, which has kind of a slightly different target demo. But in terms of that, we did receive the Mom's Choice Gold Award for, you know, children's literature, for family-friendly literature, and other youth fiction awards. So that's been, I think it does confirm where the demographic is.
Nice, nice. Well, that sounds like fun. Dan and Connie Burkhart with us. The book is called Growing Up with the River. And as we move along, it's obviously, as we're telling you, told through generation to generation chronologically. And modernization comes. Life in these towns, though, is still very much focused on the river, as we see in Chapter 5, set around 1904. Life on the river, whether you're talking about 2017 or 400 years ago, includes the fact that it's going to flood every now and then.
Yes, by 1904, when our chapter is set on the north side of the Missouri River, the Katy Railroad had just come through. And that was a terrific godsend to the people on the north side of the river who didn't have a railroad until that time. It connected them with markets to the east and west and brought goods in. A lot of small towns sprung up along the railroad in that period. And the only fly in the ointment was the constant flooding of the river. And the farmers saw their crops go under frequently, so the river brought success and brought commerce to the area. but it also brought problems, and that set the stage for what happened in later years with the efforts to control the river that go on to this day.
We go into St. Louis in 1904. If people that know their Missouri history know what 1904 is all about, and I think it was kind of interesting that while most of the history itself that's in this book is focused very much on this region along the Missouri River, there are also just the things that are happening in our country and in our world. We run into an automobile. The women can vote. You mentioned the trains coming through. And one of the things that, I did not realize, but as you're reading it, it comes into play as we get a little bit later on, is the fact that a lot of the power that's being generated for St. Louis, which was one of the very, very large cities in the United States at this point, was coming from coal. And you talk about what that did to the air in St. Louis, and specifically through the story of moving the orchids.
Yes, the theme of the book is what happens in one generation is visited on the next. And some of these things that happen take a generation to unfold. Some take two or three generations. But the story you're talking about that happened in the 1932 chapter was the extremely polluted air in St. Louis in the 20s and 30s. We had the worst air in the United States. It was dark at midday oftentimes. And through a concerted effort, that problem was ultimately solved by cleaner burning furnaces and cleaner coal. But it did cause the Missouri Botanical Garden in St. Louis to move its orchid collection west to an area not far from the Missouri River near Washington, Missouri, when they bought a piece of property that became Shaw Nature Reserve that's there to this day. Ultimately, the air in St. Louis got cleaned up. The orchids that were moved out to the country came back to St. Louis, and the air was breathable again. But that problem was a vexing one that took a generation to resolve.
We're talking with Connie and Dan Burkhart again, the book Growing Up with the River, Nine Generations on the Missouri. I made a point, I wrote down on my little notebook here that I wanted to also be sure to mention that in addition to the writing by Dan and Connie, it is illustrated beautifully by Brian Haynes. And tell me about Brian, because it's a beautiful book to look at, not just to read.
Well, Brian is truly one of the great Midwestern painters. He's dedicated to painting the Missouri that we'd like to see conserved. He does beautiful landscapes. Often people compare his style to Thomas Hart Benton or Grant Wood. It's definitely a regionalist style. And he is a good friend of ours, and we've done a number of projects with him. And when we came up with the idea of doing this book, we thought it would only work if we could get Brian to illustrate it. And fortunately, he had the time and the interest in doing that. And he created an original painting to tell the story of each chapter in the book. And as you've seen, he captures Lewis and Clark coming to La Charrette. He captures the Carolina parakeets leaving the area in the 1830s. And the Germans coming to the area in the 1860s. And it's just a tremendous way to illustrate visually what happened in each of these generations along the river.
There's really some beautiful stuff here. And one of the things that I think I wanted to ask you about that was kind of an interesting idea is that in addition to the story and the illustrations that go through the story, there are quite a few just smaller illustrations. And at the beginning of the book, you're told, look through the book for the flora and fauna. And you list a lot of different plants or animals that readers can keep an eye out for while they're going through it. That's fun.
Well, that was actually a suggestion by Fran Levine, who's the director of the Missouri History Museum here. When she and Dan were collaborating on their chapter, she said he was talking about how he wanted this book to be so interactive for families. And she said that there are so many natural elements to this book mixed with the history that perhaps it would be great to have something interactive like that at the beginning. And our grandchildren see seized on that immediately and loved just keeping track of where they saw these various things and really, you know, used it kind of like a word search throughout the book.
And it's great for I am reminded, my kids are grown up now, but I remember when they were kids and we would do one of the stereotypical field trips that you do out to the MU dairy farm close by here.
Yes.
And there were kids from the city that had been in the city their entire lives that had not even seen cows. And I thought, I've got enough family in the country that my kids have been around that. But sometimes there's kids that just don't get a chance to see that. And the fact that you're giving them an opportunity to know the difference between a persimmon and a pawpaw is kind of a great idea.
Well, you picked a great, I was just looking at that page. The peas are especially interesting. We've got passenger pigeons, pawpaws, perch, persimmons, pigs, and poodles. And you have to read the book to see where the poodle reference comes in. But we've
had teachers talk about that page
yes.
in particular, you know, because a lot of these things kind of lend themselves to informal lesson plans about Missouri history and the countryside, and they love this page.
Oh, yes. I hope the kids could tell a pig from a poodle, even if they are from the city. It's Thinking Out Loud from KBIA. We'll have more with the Burkharts, Connie and Dan, in just a moment. Again, the book is called Growing Up with the River. And I want to take a moment and remind you again that Dan and Connie Burkhart will be in Columbia, along with the artist for the illustrations on this book, Brian Haynes. This is happening next Tuesday from 4:30 until 6:30 at the Memorial Union on the University campus, the Stotler Lounge there at Memorial Union. It is the annual Missouri Botanic Garden Jacqueline K. Jones Lecture. Again, that's next Tuesday, a week from today, 4:30 till 6:30 at Stotler Lounge on the University of Missouri Columbia campus. This is fun. Again, we're talking with Dan and Connie Burkhart, Growing Up with the River, Nine Generations on the Missouri. While this is certainly something that is beloved very much in Missouri, I will tell you that some of the stuff you talked about in the 1950s sounded very much like my family in the 1950s in Oklahoma. When you talk about listening to Cardinal games on the radio, that was something that certainly the entire region was a part of. What I did not know that I read in that chapter, though, was about the taking of farms, of land, of buildings by the government for production in World War II. And you read that and you think, okay, well, I guess that was something that that they felt they had to do. But you put that in the context of a family that's lost their home and their farm.
It is really a remarkable story. At the beginning of World War II, over 10,000 acres just west of St. Louis on the Missouri River was taken by the government to create a bomb and ordnance manufacturing facility for the war. People had just a few weeks to move out. The government then burned all of the buildings on the property, the houses and barns that were inhabited by 700 families, and created the Weldon Spring Ordnance Manufacturing Facility. And that is one of the stories that took three generations to resolve before it became one of the biggest Superfund sites in the United States and was ultimately cleared of its toxic pollution in around 2000. So it's a remarkable story. And
it's another example, though, of the things Dan chose for this book, which are still available to all of us to experience now. So, you know, there are many stories in Missouri history of forts that have long been destroyed or something that we can't visit. But any of us, any of your listeners, can come out to Weldon Spring. There's a great interpretive site at the base of the what's called in the book the Rock Candy Mountain. I mean, you can learn all about the suffering of these families and the purposes of this site and the remediation, and it's still there now for us.
There's a state site at La Charette. A lot of these historical places you can go explore more. If you have a family and haven't spent some time in Herman, you should certainly do that because it's always a great deal of fun. You talked about the fact that there certainly was the ideal in writing this book about preserving the natural beauty of the state and of the Missouri River. And we certainly see one of the things that was done to try to help that along in the chapter in the 1980s, where you talk about land that had been part of the railroad becoming what we now know as the MKT Trail. There is even coverage from the Post-Dispatch of when that was happening, and a picture of our friend Pat Jones and Ted Jones, who were a big part of making that happen.
Yes, that's one of the stories we really wanted to tell in this book, that in the 210 years of history that it covers, a lot of people did a lot of things to civilize our area and to create everything that we appreciate today that gives us our modern lifestyle. But there were a few people along the way that really worked hard to conserve and protect what was there. And one of those stories is what Ted and Pat Jones did to create the Katy Trail. It's been a trail now for 30 years. A lot of people don't remember. It used to be a railroad. And so part of the reason we wanted to do the book was to remind people of the efforts of individuals that have worked so hard to protect some of what brought us here in the first place. And what Ted wanted to do with the Katy Trail was provide people who lived in the city a way to experience the country. People who didn't have a way to get out in the middle of a cornfield or see the Missouri River up close, they could do it on the Katy Trail.
Again, we're talking with Dan and Connie Burkhart, growing up with the river, nine generations on the Missouri. Tell us how people could get a hold of a copy of the book if they wanted to do that.
It's sold in a number of bookstores in St. Louis, and it can be ordered through the website of the Katy Land Trust. It's katylandtrust.org. People can order it there, and copies are $19.95.
Or I would invite anyone to come to the Pierce store if they're going to be spending some time in on the Katy Trail. The Pierce store, which is also discussed in the book and was set part of the setting for the 1904 chapter, is an old country store built in 1896 that provisioned for both the river and the railroad before both of those left Pierce. And it's the headquarters of the Katy Land Trust, and autographed copies of the book are for sale there.
Outstanding. It is obvious, as we've been talking about the different communities along the way there, that we are primarily talking about an area along the Missouri River that was settled earlier, closer to St. Louis and St. Charles and that part. But we do get a very nice mention of Boone County in there, in that you talk about our famous big tree, the Burr Oak, down by the Missouri River.
Absolutely. The Burr Oak is really the inspiration and the core of this book. To think that the McBain Burr Oak has been there for 350 years is a remarkable thing to contemplate. In our book, our boy in Chapter 1 plants a Burr Oak acorn in 1806, and we talk about Carolina parakeets that were here in large numbers in the early 1800s, nesting in the branches of that tree, and Native Americans stopping in its shade when it was a young tree. And it's still there today. It's a remarkable thing to contemplate. And that the McBain Burr Oak was really an inspiration to tell the story in the way that we did, with a tree that was planted when Lewis and Clark came through that's still here today. And obviously the McBain Burr Oak's been there a lot longer than that.
Marvelous. What fun. We talk about modern times, the Confluence State Park, how drinking water goes from being just water in the river to what comes out of the tap. And then there is a chapter set specifically in talking about the future. And obviously, some of that is what might be. Tell me about why it was important to you to include that.
Oh, that's Dan's favorite chapter in the book.
Yeah, Connie always says her favorite chapter is Chapter 1, and my favorite is the one you just mentioned, Chapter 10, that's set in 2040, and it gives us a chance to think about all of the changes that have happened in the river valley and the use of the river when it was used as a way for fur traders to go west, and then for steamboats and settlers to go west, ultimately railroads. And as you mentioned, now The Missouri River provides drinking water for 50% of all the people in Missouri. And we just ask people to contemplate what we're going to do with it by the year 2040 and what we're doing to protect it and conserve it and preserve it, because that's our main interest, is generating conversation about conservation and what we can do to protect this great asset.
It's interesting now, too, that floodplain is in the lexicon because of Houston and other issues, but, you know, a lot of us in Missouri spend a lot of time reflecting about the floodplain and building and overbuilding in the floodplain, and now nationally there might be more of a conversation on this. And, you know, Dan has just always been willing to broach this conversation, and that the last chapter takes it on.
You may have noticed that I've got a little bit of familiarity with the basic idea of children's literature. My mom had a degree in early childhood, and we grew up around probably more books than the average kid, which is a marvelous thing. And there was always this stack of books that were stories that you really enjoyed very much, and then there was this stack of books that was educational and that you were going to learn some stuff from, and then you'd have that stack in the middle, which were the books that would do both, and that was where I found this. It is a fun book. It's stories that are fun to read, but it's also an opportunity for young people to learn a lot. So mission accomplished there.
Well, thank you. You've done your homework. It's great to talk to someone who's read the book so thoroughly and understands the message.
And as you noticed early in the book, because we have a special logo for it, 100% of this book is Missouri conceived. So planned and conceived in Missouri and written and published and printed in Marceline, and everything about it is Missouri made through and through.
And if there is a young person who reads the book and says, wow, this is something we really need to take care of, there are some good resources toward the back of the book talking about how you can plant a tree, you can get involved with our friends over at Missouri River Relief, a lot of good ideas there, including talking about the Pier Store, which Connie just mentioned. All right, again, it's called Growing Up with the River, 9 Generations on the Missouri. The website you can order it from is katylandtrust.org. Dan and Connie Burkhart, what a pleasure it's been to spend some time with you guys this morning, and good luck with the book.
Thank you. We really enjoyed it.
Yes.
And as I hope you could tell, I enjoyed it very much, too. Our thanks to Dan and Connie Burkhart for being on the program, and we want to remind you one more time that they will be in Columbia, along with the artist who did the illustrations for this book, Brian Haynes. They will be speaking in the annual Mizzou Botanic Garden Lecture, the Jacqueline K. Jones Lecture, and that's coming up next Tuesday. They will be in town from 4:30 until 6:30, speaking at the Stotler Lounge at the Memorial Union here on the MU campus. Next Tuesday, 4:30 to 6:30 at Stotler. And that is our program for this evening, Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. Our thanks to Dan and Connie Burkhart for being this week's guest. We'll have another new program next week on Thinking Out Loud from KBIA. And remember, you can hear past programs at our website, kbia.org. Just click on Programs for Thinking Out Loud. For our associate producer, Trevor Harris, I'm Darren Helwedge. Have a great evening.